Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Long Way from Warsaw, a novel of World War II Poland, by Margarita Morris, narrated by Elizabeth Lajolet. Prologue. Highgate East Cemetery, London, September 2005. A sudden breeze rustles the leaves of the trees, as his sister's coffin is lowered into the ground. At least the rain has held off, although he brought an umbrella with him, just in case. He's lived in London for so long now, he's used to the vagaries of the English weather. As the priest intones the familiar words, "Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust," Jan reaches into his breast pocket for his wallet and takes out the photograph he always carries with him, next to his heart. The black-and-white image has seen better days. It's badly creased, and there's a hole in the middle. But the faces, his parents, Emmerich and Maria, his sister Anna, his older brother Lech, and himself as a skinny 11-year-old, smile at him, and he remembers that day as if it were yesterday, the 22nd of August, 1939. He's the only one of the family left now. This photograph is his most treasured possession. It was Anna's idea to take the photograph. Even though news of Lech's mobilization had come so suddenly, and time was short, he remembers her, fixing her beloved Leica to the tripod with quick, expert fingers, and setting the clockwork timer so that she could also be in the picture. There was only time for one shot, so it was a good job everyone was looking at the camera with their eyes open. At the time, it seemed like a bit of a lark, posing for a family photo before Lech went to see off those pesky Germans who were snapping at Poland's borders like a pack of overexcited gun dogs. At least, that was how it had seemed to Jan, as an 11-year-old boy. He hadn't understood the real threat from Nazi Germany. But how many people had? Hitler had cut such a ridiculous figure with his stiff-arm salute and his pathetic mustache that looked as if it had been drawn under his nose by a child with a black crayon. But looking back now, he can understand the anguish his parents must have felt, seeing their eldest son going off to war. Thank goodness Anna had the foresight to capture that moment when they were all still together, for the last time. Was it a premonition that caused her to suggest the photo? She was always the insightful one. Jan, like most 11-year-old boys, took his family for granted. It was a happy home, and he had nothing to complain about, except his mother nagging him to be home in time for tea. Now he takes nothing for granted. Your loved ones can be snatched from you in a heartbeat. As if sensing his thoughts, his wife slips her arm through his, and he turns to her, giving her a grateful smile. On his other side, his son and daughter stand with their spouses and his three, soon to be four, grandchildren. Following Anna's example, he's taken so many photographs of his family over the years. The spare bedroom is stacked high with photo albums. No, as an 11-year-old, he could never have imagined all this. All this joy and sorrow.
Through our Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our frail bodies.
The voice of the priest breaks through Jan's thoughts. Anna's body was certainly frail after what happened to her. She never fully recovered. A drop of water lands on his hand, and he realizes that he's crying. Crying for his sister. Crying for his family. Crying for his friends. Crying for his lost childhood. As the mourners prepare to leave, Yan lingers for a moment longer by his sister's grave.
"You saved my life," he tells her silently now. "If you hadn't taken this photograph, I'd have died a long time ago."
Then he puts the photograph back where it belongs, next to his heart. Part 1. Mobilization. August 1939. Chapter 1. Anna leans her bicycle against a tree and walks down to the water's edge, her Leica slung around her neck on its leather strap. A family of ducks, mother, father, and 5 ducklings, is bobbing on the lake near the shore, and she wants to capture the moment before they disappear. She crouches down to get a better angle, lifts the camera, and peers through the rangefinder to focus the lens. The Leica was a present from her parents on her 18th birthday, and she's still getting used to it, experimenting with the aperture and shutter settings to get the best results in different lighting conditions. Today, she slipped out of the apartment before anyone else was awake, and the light has a clean, fresh quality to it, which she hopes will make for a good set of photographs. She's been in Stare Miasto, the old town, photographing the old houses with their ornate facades, the churches and the royal castle, finishing with a detour through the Krasinski Gardens on her way back to Krolevska. She presses the button and hears the satisfying click of the shutter before a breeze ruffles the surface of the water and the ducks paddle away. She straightens up and returns to her bicycle. Sounds of the city waking up reach her from beyond the edge of the park. She's stayed out longer than she intended. Her mother will be getting breakfast ready. She mounts her bicycle and sets off in the direction of home. For some reason that she can't explain, she pedals faster than usual. She tells herself it's because she doesn't want her mother to worry. But later, she'll admit to herself that there was something she couldn't quite put her finger on. A certain tension in the air. A sense of time running out. At the apartment block on Krolevska, she runs lightly up the stairs to the second floor, the feeling of urgency intensifying all the time. An unfamiliar smell, cologne mixed with tobacco, warns her that someone has just climbed the stairs ahead of her. As she rounds the corner, she sees a man, a policeman in fact, standing outside her parents' apartment, his fist raised, about to knock on the door. What can he possibly want? She shivers, despite having just cycled fast in the warm sun. "Can I help you?" she asks, climbing the final flight of stairs. She's surprised at how calm her voice sounds when her heart is thumping against her ribcage. She clutches the camera like a talisman, as if it has the power to ward off whatever is about to happen. Level with him now, she sees he's holding a slip of red paper. This cannot be good news. But these are not normal times, as her father keeps reminding them. War with Germany is a distinct possibility.
"Does Lech Novak live here?"
The policeman breathes heavily, and beads of sweat stand out on his brow. "He's my brother. But he won't be up yet," she thinks. Not given the time he crawled in last night.
"Please give him this."
The policeman thrusts the piece of red paper into her hands and then takes the stairs to the ground floor 2 at a time. Stunned, Anna leans over the banister and sees the top of his head disappearing out of the door. She slips into the apartment, pausing in the hallway to read the piece of paper. Her breath catches in her throat. It's a mobilization order for her older brother. Lech is a reserve officer in the artillery. He's to report immediately to the Light Artillery Regiment in Warsaw.
"What's that you've got there, love?"
Her mother appears from the kitchen, carrying a fresh loaf of bread through to the dining room. Did I hear you talking to someone? Maria is wearing her old house dress, the one she wears when she's planning a day of baking. Emeruk emerges from his study, his brow furrowed.
What is it, Anna?
Anna hates to be the bearer of bad news, but having intercepted the policeman, it's now her responsibility to inform her parents of their eldest child's fate. Mutely, she hands the slip of paper to her father. Maria rushes to her husband's side, and together they bend their graying heads over the mobilization order. Anna watches, helpless. She should have told the policeman there was no one by the name of Lech Novak living here. She could kick herself for her stupidity. Maria lets out a cry and runs back to the kitchen. It's her sanctuary, her place of refuge. But her father remains where he is, his face impassive, apart from a slight contraction of his brow.
I've been expecting this for some time now, he says.
Before Anna can respond, Jan tears out of his room in his pajamas, barefoot, his hair tousled.
What's going on?
Only Lech is still sleeping through this drama which concerns him. Maria reappears, her eyes red and puffy, and attempts to draw her youngest son into an embrace. But he pulls away, embarrassed by this outpouring of emotion and motherly love.
I'll wake him up.
Anna goes to Lech's door. She knocks and calls his name. When there's no answer, she opens the door and peers into the gloom. The reek of stale tobacco, alcohol, and male sweat assaults her nostrils. Much as she loves her brother, his personal habits can be trying.
Lech, you need to get up.
He's lying on his front, his head turned sideways, one half of his face pressed into the pillow. A bare arm hangs over one side of the bed, the fingers trailing on the floor. Dead to the world. Losing patience, Anna marches up to his bed, switches on the bedside lamp, and gives his shoulder a firm shake.
Lech, you have to wake up.
What?
He comes to with a start, staring at her with bloodshot eyes.
Anna, what the hell? You frightened the life out of me.
Time to get up.
Why? What's happened?
He rolls over onto his back and squints at her, shielding his eyes from the light with one hand.
Your papers have arrived.
What papers?
You've been called up.
Called up?
He repeats slowly, as if he doesn't understand the meaning of the words.
It's your regiment, she articulates slowly. You have to report for duty.
Realization dawns on his face. He sits up suddenly, then clutches his head and falls back onto the pillow with a groan. Late night, was it? She crosses her arms and tilts her head to one side, raising her eyebrows at him. She can't resist an opportunity to tease him, even on a day like today.
Be a good sister and fetch me a glass of water and an aspirin, would you? I just need a minute.
Taking pity on him, she does as he asks, and when she returns, he has at least managed to sit up in bed. But he looks a fright, his hair sticking up in tufts and dark smudges under his eyes.
Heaven help us, she thinks,
if Poland's future depends on the likes of her brother. He takes the aspirin and knocks it back with the water.
Thanks.
He gives her a rueful smile, acknowledging that he might have overindulged last night.
I'll be along in a minute.
Anna returns the Laika to her room, then goes to help her mother with the breakfast. If this is to be Lechia's last meal before setting out, she knows Maria will want to make it a special one. Heaven forbid that Lech would be called upon to defend his country on an empty stomach.
Maria has already covered the table with her best linen tablecloth. Anna helps her put out fruit preserves, slices of cold meat, cheese, boiled eggs, fresh butter, and bread rolls. By the time they've finished, it's a breakfast fit for a king.
So, where's this mobilization order?
Lech finally appears, washed and dressed, and wearing his military uniform. The uniform has transformed him from a hungover layabout to a respectable Polish officer, and Anna's heart swells with pride. She passes him the piece of paper, which Lech studies carefully.
Are you going to fight the Germans?
Asks Jan, his eyes lighting up. He has changed out of his pajamas into his shorts and shirt.
Is there going to be a war?
Hush, says Maria, carrying a pot of coffee into the room. This is not a game.
I'm sure it's nothing to get excited about, says Lech with his usual casualness. Probably just a limited mobilization. Show Hitler how well prepared we are. Then he'll think twice about crossing the border.
Jan looks disappointed, but Anna hopes Lech is right. Lech has always been the optimistic one, breezing through life with a carefree attitude that she envies. She can see from her father's face that he doesn't share Lech's optimism, but he won't want to say anything that will worry his wife.
Now, everyone sit down and have something to eat.
Maria claps her hands together.
We are going to eat together as a family before Lech goes away.
She bustles back into the kitchen, but not before Anna has seen her surreptitiously wiping her eye with the back of her hand. She returns with the bread knife, saying brightly,
Now then, who would like bread?
It seems to Anna that this breakfast has the solemnity of a last supper. This could be the last time they will all be together for a while. The thought makes her throat constrict, and she has to force herself to swallow. But then she looks at Lech, who is liberally spreading butter on a thick slice of bread, and wonders if she isn't being a little melodramatic. Maybe Lech is right after all? He could be home in a matter of weeks, days even. When the Germans see that Poland has amassed a serious defense, they'll back off. At least, that's the theory. Her father, she notices, is eating very little, his brow set in a frown of concentration. She has no doubt that he understands the situation far more than any of them. Certainly more than Lech, who hardly ever bothers to pick up a newspaper or listen to the radio. Anna catches Lech's eye across the table. She wants to ask him what he really thinks about the mobilization order. He seems unconcerned, but is that just bravado? He winks at her. Is that supposed to be reassuring? She doesn't feel reassured.
Don't forget to take plenty of warm underwear with you, says Maria, as she pours Lech a cup of black coffee.
Honestly, says Lech, laughing. It's August, not the middle of winter. I'll be going to the Polish countryside, not Siberia.
You don't know how long you'll be gone for, says Maria. It will be autumn soon, and the weather can change suddenly.
I'll be back in a couple of weeks. We'll show the Germans what we're capable of. Then it will all be over.
Are you going to shoot the Germans? Asks Jan. Have you got a gun? Can I see it?
That's enough, Jan, says Maria. We do not talk about shooting people at the breakfast table.
Jan's shoulders slump, and he picks at his bread, scattering crumbs over the edge of his plate. After breakfast, Lech goes off to pack, and Anna helps her mother wrap up food parcels for him in the kitchen. A half loaf of bread, a whole sausage, 4 ripe apples, some cheese wrapped in muslin, a meat pie. It reminds her of family picnics in the countryside, swimming in the lake, ball games, her father reading a book, her mother setting out the checked picnic blanket.
Lech calling her to come into the water. It's lovely and warm. And then laughing at her when she shrieks with the shock of the cold.
Will he have room for all this food? She asks. There's enough here to feed half the battalion.
I don't want him to go hungry, says Maria.
You don't know what sort of rations they'll get.
Her tone suggests she doesn't trust the Polish army to look after its young men. At least, not the way a mother would.
Lech appears in the doorway with his kit bag slung over his shoulder.
I hope you've left room for all this, says Anna, indicating the huge pile of food. She catches his eye, and a look of understanding passes between them. She wants to laugh. She can see he does too. But they control themselves, not wanting to offend their mother, who means well.
Anna helps him squash the bread, sausage, fruit, cheese, and meat pie in amongst his clothes.
Don't eat it all at once, she jokes.
I'll try not to.
He lifts his bag off the table.
I guess I should be going.
So soon. Anna has to stop him, even if just for a minute or two. She has an idea. Wait. She runs to her bedroom and grabs her camera. Then she takes the tripod down from the top shelf in her wardrobe. Thank goodness she didn't use up the whole roll of film this morning. Returning to the living room, she says,
Gather round, everyone. I'm going to take a picture.
But my hair's a mess, says Maria,
tucking loose strands behind her ears.
I haven't had time to arrange it this morning.
It doesn't matter, says Anna.
She just wants a picture of everyone before.
Before what?
Of course, this isn't going to be the last picture of them all together. But it seems like a moment that should be preserved.
Everyone, stand over there.
She points to a place in front of the sideboard, where the morning sun is shining on the wall. She can be quite bossy when the occasion demands it. Whilst they shuffle into position and arrange themselves, she fixes the camera onto the tripod, checks the focus, and makes sure everyone is in the frame.
Lech is standing between Emmerich and Maria, a head taller than both. Jan is in front of his older brother, pulling faces at her.
She sets the clockwork timer, one of the features of this model of camera, then moves quickly to stand next to her mother.
Smile!
She orders, as the timer ticks down. There's a flash of light, and a click of the shutter as the camera captures the moment.
There. It's done.
She hopes everyone was looking at the lens with their eyes open. There isn't time to take another shot. After the excitement of the family photograph, the atmosphere is subdued. Even Yen has calmed down, perhaps understanding for the first time the seriousness of the occasion. It isn't every day that your big brother is called up. Emmerich shakes Lech's hand before drawing him into an embrace.
God bless you, son.
The words catch in his throat, and he wipes a tear from his eye.
I'm sure you'll do Poland proud.
Maria holds her eldest child tight, as if she never wants to let him go. She plants a kiss on his forehead and murmurs that she loves him. Lech ruffles Jan's hair.
See you soon, soldier, he says. Look after everyone for me.
Jan nods solemnly, for a moment seeming much older. Finally, Lech turns to Anna and hugs her tight.
It'll be all right, sis. I'll be back soon.
I hope so, she says, her throat tight and her heart full.
And then he's gone, the sound of his boots echoing in the stairwell. Chapter 2. Once he's out of the apartment and striding down the street, Lech breathes a sigh of relief. He's always hated long-winded goodbyes. The photo was a nice idea, but he felt foolish being the cause of so much fuss.
It was all too emotional. As if Anna wasn't expecting him to return. Ever. She can be fanciful sometimes, letting her ideas run away with her. Lech refuses to think like that. He'll be back home before the leaves start to fall. If he's honest, the mobilization couldn't have come at a better time. Now he won't have to worry about being sacked from the bank. Since leaving university, he's struggled to find a career he actually enjoys. He hates being cooped up in a windowless office all day. Come to think of it, it wouldn't be a bad thing if he was away for a month or two. Give him time to think about his future and what he wants to do with his life. He nods a greeting to their neighbor, old Pan Vozniak, who has popped out to buy a newspaper and is making his slow, doddering way back to the apartment building.
"Good morning, young sir," says the old man.
His eyes flick to the canvas kit bag on Lech's shoulder, and he stands as straight as his aged frame will allow.
"I see you have been called upon to defend our country. May God be with you."
"Thank you," says Lech. "But the Polish army is well prepared."
He doesn't expect they'll need the intervention of the Almighty.
"Hmm."
Pan Vozniak sounds unconvinced.
"Anyway, I mustn't hold you up. Good day to you."
"And the same to you," says Lech. "And give my regards to your wife," he adds to the old man's retreating back.
Why is everyone so worried? The whole point of this mobilization is to show Herr Hitler that the Poles are not going to be a pushover like the Czechs. Anna thinks he doesn't pay any attention to current affairs. But even he noticed when the Nazis marched into Austria and then Czechoslovakia. He's not a complete idiot. But the difference between those countries and Poland is that Poland will put up a proper fight. Poland is well prepared. Isn't that what the newspapers and cinema newsreels have been saying all summer? Smiling schoolchildren and factory workers posing for photographs beside brand new tanks built with the funds they raised. Posters of infantry columns marching beneath the protection of a sky full of Polish planes. The captions declaring that Poland is strong, united, and ready. He takes a deep breath, filling his lungs with the early morning air, and exhales loudly, adjusting his kit bag on his shoulder. His mother has packed so much food, it weighs a ton. He'll share it with the other men on the train. Always a good way to win friends. At least his hangover is beating a hasty retreat, thanks to the aspirin and the 3 cups of strong black coffee he drank at breakfast. How many glasses of vodka did he have last night? No idea. He remembers the bar was crowded and smoky with darkened windows and a live band. And the singing. He remembers the singing. Patriotic songs about Poland that grew increasingly belligerent as the evening wore on. And the woman he danced with. My God, how could he not have remembered her? He feels a stirring in his groin as he recalls her curvaceous figure and tumbling dark curls. He never knew her name and doesn't know what happened to her. But if last night was his last night of freedom for a while, then what a way to spend it. He doesn't remember how he got home. Probably one of his friends put him in a taxi. Yes, that will have been it. And then he slept the sleep of the dead until Anna woke him this morning. He winces at the thought of his sister seeing him like that, crashed out and stinking of old cigarette smoke and stale alcohol. Anna would never behave like that. At the barracks, he joins a long queue of men waiting to report to the duty officer. More keep arriving all the time. Eventually, it's his turn. The duty officer studies Lech's mobilization order, stamps it, and gives him a train ticket to Oświęcim, ordering him to depart immediately, all in the space of about 30 seconds. Then he orders the next man in the queue to step forward. Lech takes his ticket outside.
Now that he has an actual
sample complete. Ready to continue?